Hello and welcome to Building Our Future with me, Bert Broadhead. The Internet of Things is a concept that continues to gain momentum in the way that it impacts our lives. Smart technologies are appearing in all sorts of daily occurrences, from listening to music to telling the time. Smart buildings are also having their moment, but what does this term really mean and what's the point of it? In the beginning, smart buildings was often synonymous with facilities management, but now it's a key component in the growing agenda to make the built environment more sustainable, as well as improving occupant well-being and productivity. Schneider Electric have been working on smart buildings across the globe since the idea's infancy, so they seemed like a great place to find out exactly what's going on. My guest today is Pradyumna Pandit, Vice President, UK and Ireland of Digital Energy at Schneider Electric. He previously worked at Honeywell for 18 years, where he held roles in Asia, the Americas, and EMEA. Prad, very warm welcome to Building Our Future.
Thank you very much, Bert.
Well, it's great to have someone on to talk about smart buildings. So everywhere we turn, people are talking about Internet of Things, smart this, smart that. You seem to be kind of at the intersection of hardware, software, and ultimately providing solutions. Where are you seeing most of the demand for smart buildings emanating from?
I think quite a lot of the demand comes from all the changes happening in our personal lives. So the advent of smart, whether it's your phone or in your home, increasingly we see the application of these technologies like mobile technologies, easier graphical user interfaces, wireless, the cloud, all these technologies are making our lives, personal lives, quite smart, let's say. So increasingly occupants of spaces, buildings, expect these things or smartness to be available in their workspaces as well. Patients expect to have a smart experience in the hospital room. Students expect to be part of a smart campus when they go to university. So increasingly, it's the occupants who are and users of our spaces who are driving this demand for smart.
In terms of how that filters through to you, is that kind of HR functions within businesses or facilities managers? Who's kind of really coming to you and asking for these solutions?
I think it depends on the particular situation that some of the clients find themselves in. And it can be an answer of all. So right now, let's start with if somebody is trying to build a new building. So as an owner of a new building that is going to let the facility out or going to sell it on to somebody, designing a smart building is known to get higher rents or have a higher asset value. So naturally, they are designing in smarts when they design that building in the new construction phase. Equally, we had a situation to share the HR angle. We had a situation where one of our clients was consolidating several different offices into a single office in a large city. And when they moved to that single office, they were asking a lot of people to change their travel habits and move to, you know, make a difference in their lives. So definitely they wanted to have a more engaging space, and it was on the minds of HR. And in this case, the HR team actually reached out to a technology company like Schneider Electric and said, you know, what do you all have to offer in terms of a new workspace and a way to engage employees? So in that case, HR was involved. Facilities management is another angle. So there is a lot of pressure on facilities management companies and facilities departments, continued pressure to be cost effective, at the same time, sustainable.
Schneider operate globally, and you're a billion-dollar business, so you must see case studies from all over the place. Do you break these smart demands down by that split between kind of customer demand and let's call it kind of FM efficiencies savings?
So, Bert, actually, Schneider Electric is slightly bigger than that. So, on a worldwide basis, we are about 27 billion euros.
Right.
And about 145,000 employees. We tend to look at our market in terms of our end users and in terms of the customers we serve in those end users. So we look at buildings, for example, in three ways. Residential buildings. Then we have the non-domestic properties or commercial buildings. And then we feel that data centers is a particular building of the future that is going to be very energy hungry, that will require to have all the smart. So we definitely look at data centers as a building separately. Then there is the industry and market, which is the manufacturing industry, be it process or discrete. And finally, we look at infrastructure. So Schneider Electric is very core in energy management and power distribution. And so we work a lot with utility companies in that space as well. So those that's how we look at the end markets. And then within the end markets, of course, we are trying to solve customer problems. And customer problems are usually around safety, efficiency, reliability, security. Cybersecurity in the Internet of Things also becomes a big topic. So then we tend to have our solutions based around these customer objectives around safety, reliability, efficiency, and security.
How mature is the kind of energy efficiency element of smart? Are we in a place where we can now kind of see where this is all heading and it's now just a race to get there, or is the kind of technology still kind of nascent as to how it will all unfold?
In my personal opinion, I think the technology has been there. Technology has been there for a long time. I think its pervasiveness is not adequate. So there is a performance gap between how buildings are designed and how they actually operate. So based on the design, people get a certificate for the green credentials, if you will, or sustainability credentials or performance credentials of a building.
You're talking about BREEAM or
Or LEED or any certification, or even your DEC certificate or your EPC certificate. So these are a point in time based on what's in the building. They are in some way divorced from operational performance of the building. And so this performance gap is not visible. Its energy impact, although it has a big impact on the environment, all these small pieces add up together with the buildings being a very large emitter. But if you look at an individual building, energy costs from an economic standpoint tend to be a small proportion of the total costs of running a building, including the cost of salaries of the people who are working in the building.
Right.
So definitely it's not top of the mind, or not has not been top of the mind of, say, the C-level suite over the last some years. But now with the increasing awareness of the impact of emissions and the energy-related emissions, in the end, it's all energy-related emissions, and you can't make all energy renewable at the flick of a button. So definitely there is an increasing sensitivity to having awareness on where that gap is. So typically we do see that smart, and I think this is something that the C-level intuitively understands. They do understand that what you cannot measure, you cannot control or you cannot improve. So definitely a lot of emphasis I see will come back on making that performance gap visible, having those monitoring systems, knowing where your energy is wasted and spent. I don't think the level of pervasiveness is as high as it can be. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some wonderful examples of very conscientious owners, occupiers, who do a great job at measuring their real-time use and knowing where they are spending their money in terms of energy or the impact they are having. But a lot more people can do the same.
Clearly, kind of the measuring and the understanding is important, but there's plenty of press about technologies, which are particularly things like air conditioning, which are now able to measure or identify when there are problems or in advance and start kind of ordering their own repairs, as it were. So kind of predictive maintenance and stuff like that. Does that fall under the remit of smart?
Yes, absolutely. So I think smart people have always occupied buildings, only that the buildings were dumb. So we have to now put smart people in smart buildings. So when we say a smart building, actually it's made up of smart components and smart pieces of equipment that make the building up. And if you look at it increasingly, a lot of the equipment that goes in a building is beginning to get instrumented, has the sensors, like you said, it's collecting the data. And it is often done in its silos. So the air conditioning system has its sensors and measurement. The lift system has it. The security system has it. The chillers, the boilers, the heating ventilation, the heating equipment have it. So all these various pieces of equipment that make up the building have these smarts inbuilt. Because these systems have typically been designed in silos, in isolation, often they don't work as one whole to provide a better occupant experience or to provide ease of operation and maintainability. So now this ability to integrate these systems by having common data standards, by having integration platforms, by having more confidence in cybersecurity, there's this trend where you can now begin to have crossover between a business process. So for example, if the lift breaks down, is it able to send an automatic update to the facilities help desk at the same time, perhaps alerting the equipment manufacturer that there is a problem, and that person could potentially remotely dial in before dispatching somebody to site who might not have all the answers or the skill to actually fix the problem, but you can imagine is wearing an augmented reality headset or has, say, a connection to a remote health center where the knowledge resides and they're talking to each other and collaboratively solving the problem.
It seems to me that there's so many things you can do to make a building smart now, but that there isn't a one-size-fits-all. Someone can't come to you and say, make my office building smart. It really depends what they want out of it.
Cool.
Are people kind of intimidated by the step to, you know, what is currently analog but quite simple, to going into this place where there's so many benefits, but you are kind of opening yourself up to big data and having to control what's a pretty complicated ecosystem?
I think the good part of the evolution of this story is the fact that the angle of people productivity is coming in quite strongly. Let's take the case of office environments. People are most familiar with office environments. There is genuinely a war on talent. So, you know, employment in the UK, for example, employment levels are at record highs. And spaces and places where people work can definitely be a differentiator to the employee value proposition to attract people. Once they are in the building, spaces that work for them are aligned and configured in a way that support their work practices is also something that drives the productivity of those smart people in the buildings. So there is the angle of human productivity or people productivity in a building to look at. And at the same time, there is this increasingly demanding or consciousness around sustainability and efficiency and having and minimizing our footprint on Earth. So I think these two trends coming together are pretty powerful for this area of work. And one of the things that people have not focused a lot on in the past, which can really help us all, is the ability to link smarts to some specific outcomes and which are measurable. This is what makes the business cases quite strong.
Totally. It's the validation. Like, I can see how that can happen on the sustainability front and the cost efficiency. You've got measurables, you can give yourself targets. How do you think about it when you're looking at something like employee productivity or something like that? Are there kind of KPIs or things you can track to demonstrate the kind of productivity of what you're delivering?
It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of KPI that can, but depending on your area of work, people have some indication of what constitutes productivity for that workforce. So whether it's cost per unit output of something, or you can link it to absenteeism, people usually have employee engagement scores, and some employee engagement surveys specifically ask questions around tools and workspaces that the company provides. So there are several listening mechanisms, and you might even decide to design one for yourself, which is more relevant to your specific business case at a particular time. For example, in the previous case we talked about, we could have done a before after case where people were consolidated from 7 different offices into the one office. Very important to measure for sure. And thinking about what business outcome we're trying to drive, you can define and design your KPIs along that. And people are doing it. And even for the case of productivity of humans. There are also for wellness and for just indoor air quality and indoor air and indoor environments, there are standards. And a lot of companies also have their comfort policies. Now, what they don't necessarily have is a check against how they are doing against those standards or how they are doing against that policy. Now, you can imagine smart technologies allow you to measure that. So, for instance, we have an application that allows for wellness assurance for indoor environment across parameters. So you can set the parameters that your policy has in terms of the indoor quality of the environment.
So kind of air quality, light quality.
Yeah. Air quality, light quality, noise quality, indoor odors, and such like. Hmm. And you could track how that is improving over time. Now, when you start to overlay that data against occupancy and people moving in and out of spaces, you start to get a good picture of where spaces are being used, which are the more popular spaces, and people are driving changes to their workspace based on that intelligence or that information. Again, all of it driven by the Internet of Things, driven by much cheaper sensors, much easier ability to collect data, much easier ability to analyze data, host it in the cloud.
You've been doing this for a long time, and have there been any red herrings that you've seen, things which people got kind of excited about and frankly don't actually add a huge amount of kind of insight or value, which you've subsequently kind of moved away from?
What I do find is that people don't take the trouble to scale. So I must accept that this is a new field, or we all must accept this is a new field. And the amount of knowledge and success is limited. So I think it's quite important for industry clients, so end users, occupiers, facilities management companies, and technology companies like ourselves to embed those skills in the technologies so that the next generation becomes easier to deploy, simpler to use, and their scalability improves. So if you look at technologies around predictive analytics or artificial intelligence-driven support to maintainability of equipment, some of those technologies still require a level of expertise,
right,
which is not so commonly available, or if it's available, it's probably solving some other problems. So I think there's an opportunity definitely to codify some of that intelligence into the applications themselves so that its scalability and repeatability can be increased.
My layman's view on this is that technologists seem to be getting very excited about facilities management in particular because of the opportunity to gather data. And clearly, data ultimately feeds predictive analytics and AI. So buildings seem to offer this opportunity, this kind of data-rich opportunity, which actually very few other kind of semi-controlled environments do. The concept being that, you know, if we can actually crack it in buildings, then this might be replicable in other areas.
Yeah. So I think those of us who serve the buildings market, they are really excited because the data already exists. We know that data has existed for the last so many years. It's just that it's a data chaos instead of being mined for its information. And the reason is that, as I said before, they are data silos. Some of them behind closed protocols, not behind industry open standard protocols. And really the drivers to mine and use that data and some of the technologies also were not available. Now, with the advent of the cloud, with the advent of artificial intelligence and the science that goes around alongside that, machine learning, the ability to process and get actionable information, insights from that data has improved exponentially.
The question that gets asked a lot about IoT is security. What can people do to kind of get smart on how they start thinking about protecting themselves on that front?
So on the security front, I think there are two things that we need to keep in mind. So first of all, quite a lot of people use it or see it as a barrier to move. Mm-hmm. Now, this cannot be. If we reflect on our daily lives, we have some pretty critical transactions related to pretty critical topics like our own money that we feel confident to do with a risk level of risk. Of course, there's risk in everything, but we are assured that there are protections possible that protect our data, that protect the security of our personal finances. Now, if you have the same situation in an industrial environment, equipment and software, they are designed to be secure. Good companies have certifications around their products so that they enable those products to be designed to be secure. Then there are recommended secure architectures in which you put these products together as part of a solution. So architectures are secure. And then the all important thing of ensuring reduction in human error.
Yeah, your architecture point is probably the most kind of relevant to me. So I guess I hear a lot about IoT. Someone only needs to hack one kind of sensor and then they're into the system. But what are you saying by architecture? I think is that as long as you've kind of siloed off your IoT from, you know, the company's kind of financial records, then getting access to one doesn't necessarily mean you've got a security breach on the other.
Absolutely right. So when somebody says that they can enter from a sensor and then find their way into somewhere else, which they're not supposed to be at, it's because the path from the sensor to that place wasn't secure.
Right.
And it is definitely possible to architect a system or a network in a way, both in terms of hardware and software controls, that allows you to isolate pieces and parts and allows you to protect it in that fashion. So one must have cybersecurity as a integral requirement or aspect, definitely, of any integration platform or integration architecture that they choose to bring all these devices and all these applications together. Because these applications work only by the exchange of data. So it's going to be there. And so it's just one of an additional project risk to address, I would say, not something to use as a reason not to do.
You mentioned hardware. Is there a, or how do you mitigate against the concern of kind of technological obsolescence and all of your kind of sensors and stuff being kind of out of date in 10 years' time?
Let me ask you a question around sensors being out of date.
Yes.
How do you mean that a sensor would be out of date? It's just like our phone being out of date.
Right.
So definitely IoT systems will require us to upgrade, to maintain, to make sure they are in working order. It's no different than anything else.
You're not worried about having to go in 5 years' time for a project you put in and go, guys, we've got to replace all of your sensors because there's now something shiny and new and offers a lot more.
So I think whatever people put in, they put in to solve a use case. So if something that is shiny and new solves a use case much better, It makes life more efficient. It makes life more secure. It makes the client more money than what significantly. Then there is a business case. So very few people, if any, are investing in anything without knowing what they get in return. So I think upgrades also work like that. Now, the other reason to upgrade is obsolescence. And I feel that the 5 to 7 year life cycle of electronics is nowadays acceptable. And people do accept that these things need to be upgraded, will become obsolete.
Well, many buildings, particularly kind of commercial, are built now with, you know, a 25, 30 year life cycle, so, or life projection. So if you've got technology lasting that long, that's a pretty positive sign.
It's a positive sign, and it can be made to last. So I think we use the term, it's far too easy to rip and replace, but I think technology definitely allows customers to migrate in a phased and controlled manner rather than necessarily rip and replace everything.
In terms of rip and replace, retrofitting or kind of building in a new development, which is easier and kind of more cost effective to achieve.
In a new space, it shouldn't be an option. So if we are to, you know, depending on which report you read, so a built environment in the UK needs to cut down its emissions by between 40 to 60% if we are to hit our climate change, the Paris Agreement. New buildings must be developed with energy intensity at mind. There are some benchmarks the UK Green Building Council has recently put out, which say what those expected benchmarks of performance of buildings should be, were we to try and hit those targets, or which is now actually legally binding. So as, right. as a country, as an economy, we need to do that. So I think in the new buildings, we must do it. Now, when it comes to retrofit, it's quite important that we address that challenge, because 50%, 60% of the buildings that are going to be standing 20 years from now are already built. So if you don't address that stock of buildings, you're saying that we can't make 50 to 60% of our buildings smarter.
Right.
And that's a lost opportunity. So I think people, again, we picked up on the word a rip and replace, and they feel there's going to be some wholesale change. I'm going to have to rip everything out and put everything back new, and it's going to be a huge cost. I would say that starting with an economic case, with a business problem or with a business objective or a problem to solve, quite a lot of the sensing technologies are very non-intrusive. They are built around wireless technologies. You don't need to pull new wires. They are usually battery operated. In some cases, not even battery operated. Enotion sensors are battery-less sensing. So there is a lot of non-intrusive aspect to some of these technologies, particularly in the retrofit market. So I think people should present technology companies and their consultants and the people who they work with their use case and the problem they're trying to solve, and explore what possibilities can be there with minimum intrusion and minimum disruption to their business.
One of the themes we come across quite a lot on the podcast is a breaking down of silos at the moment across various different things. And when we think about smart, the property industry is already getting to grips with things like BIM models and digital twins. How does smart kind of fit into that technological movement?
I think the digital twin aspect is the future of smart. So what is happening at this point is there is a digital twin for the individual equipments for sure. And there's a digital twin for the whole building, but it's not instrumented in real time and it's not getting the data values in real time. So now you can imagine that a fully instrumented building working on an information platform that allows access to that data to all. So you can actually imagine a digital twin which has the same temperatures, flows, pressures, occupancy levels. It knows everything that the physical world knows because it's got all the sensors.
Right.
So now, when you design the building, you use the digital simulation to tell you how that building should perform. And here's that performance gap discussion that we started off with. The digital twin, with all its sensors operating in real time or near real time, can tell you how that building is performing or it's behaving right now. And that what you were comparing on an individual equipment level to see whether this lift was faulty or this chiller was faulty, you can start to look at those gaps at a full building level, at a full system level.
So you effectively stop having a digital twin, it just becomes a digital building.
Yes, so there's a physical building, yeah. It's already there.
Yeah.
And then you have this digital building or the digital twin of that building.
Yeah.
That's doing all the what ifs.
Fine.
And then it's telling the real thing.
Feeding back to it.
Feeding back to it so that the feedback loop is closed. Okay.
My guess will be that how a lot of our listeners start seeing the implementation or the impact of these technologies will be through kind of the increasing rise of BIM and digital twins. But I guess the other place where it's most likely to affect people is at home. And I know you do domestic solutions, which I guess are aimed at much kind of larger scale build-to-rent operations and what have you. But if people are thinking about just understanding this technology better and how to implement some changes at home, do you have any recommendations for places to start?
I think start with lights, start with the control of your heating, start with the control of your entertainment. These are already at your fingertips. Now, like in the commercial world, probably there are different silos. So there is a remote for the speaker, there is the light switch, there is the control for your heating and ventilation at home. All that smart homes or technologies do is bring all those smarts into a single user interface that you can have on your mobile device, on your mobile phone, and you can interact with your house and you can control it using that on the same single device. That's the ease with which you're able to operate your home. And this is exactly, as we said, driving the movement in the commercial space as well, where everybody wants to bring all these disparate things together and provide that control to the user of the building.
Awesome. So we're on to our final three questions, Brad. So to begin with, do you have a favorite building?
Instinctively, I say the Taj Mahal. But people say that's a monument. It's not a building.
No, I'm taking that as a building. The next question is, please may you recommend us a book that's influenced your thinking when it comes to smart buildings?
When it comes to smart buildings?
Or just your career in general?
I think the career piece is quite easier to answer. But I think one thing that made a big impression on me was one of my favorite authors is Peter Drucker. Management in the area of management science. And he wrote, I think it's a 13-page article called Managing Oneself. And his call was around knowing your strengths, knowing what you're good at, don't worry about fixing your weaknesses, knowing how you learn, knowing what kind of environments you contribute your best in, and picking and making choices in your life aligned to those things rather than trying to fix a weakness, trying to fit in where you don't naturally belong. I think that had a big impact on me. So it's a wonderful article and it's only a very short read of 13 pages. And I would strongly recommend anybody to read it. Managing Oneself by Peter Drucker.
I shall add it to our show notes and I'll be sure to check it out. Thank you. And finally, which technology or tech business are you most excited about in terms of its impact on the built environment?
Undoubtedly for me, it's the digital twin. So a real-time instrumented digital twin, which has been developed from its conception to its operatable over the 30-year life cycle or the 50-year life cycle of the asset is a fantastic trend. So there are lots in the process industries, the ability to model process plants on the drawing board in simulated software and then scale up has existed for a long time. And this exciting trend or approach is definitely coming into the construction industry. There's a lot of adoption in the area of BIM, in the area of digital twins, and which can have a big impact from the design to the final demise of the building over its life cycle. It's a really fantastic opportunity. And if there are any young listeners who want to join an industry which is for the future, definitely a lot of the IT skills, technology skills, design skills, cybersecurity skills, building industry, building automation industry is a good industry to join.
Solid endorsement. Thank you very much for coming on. How can people get in touch if they've been listening and they've got solutions or need solutions and need a bit of advice?
Pradyumna Pandit is your name. I'm available on LinkedIn and www.se.com. So Schneider Electric.
Brilliant. Thanks, Brad. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Bert. Bye. Thanks a lot.
It feels like buildings are going to become smarter in all sorts of ways. While there may be some common goals, such as improving sustainability and improving occupant experience, it seems likely that the technological specifications of buildings is going to be specifically shaped by the desired outcomes of the specific occupiers. Now, there is clearly a baseline of expectation, though, that's applicable for most users. And as with so many data-driven initiatives, the road to victory starts with measuring and monitoring usage patterns and behaviours. So if you're not implementing any form of smart technology, perhaps now's the time to dip your toes into the waters, as this feels like a change that's here to stay. As ever, if you've enjoyed the episode, please do recommend the show to a friend or colleague. It's hugely appreciated. Until next time, thank you for listening.